You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a group of Milwaukee teens are helping beautify a new stormwater basin with murals inspired by ideas from their community. We'll find out what they created. First, between now and the August 14th primary, Wisconsin Public Radio has invited candidates running in contested primaries for statewide office and congressional seats to join us for interviews here on Central Time and on The Morning Show. You'll be able to find all of those interviews at wisconsinvote.org. Congressman James Sensenbrenner is a Republican from Menominee Falls who represents Wisconsin's 5th Congressional District and is running for re-election. I talked to him last week. Congressman Sensenbrenner, thanks for joining us.
Well, glad to be here.
Well, we're asking all the candidates to do this. Take 30 seconds or so to pitch yourself to voters in your district. Why should they send you back to Congress?
I have a record of proven effectiveness, and with Paul Ryan's retirement, the Wisconsin congressional delegation needs somebody with experience and ability to be able to get bills passed and to protect our state's interest. Because of the fact that I got a lot of bills passed, a lot of amendments passed, and I know how to pull some strings out there in a bipartisan way, I'm asking for people's votes in the Republican primary on August 14th.
Before we get into big national issues, what issues do you think are important here in Wisconsin, in your district in particular, that you would be advocating for?
Well, the first thing is to keep the prosperity going. I never believed I would see the day when Wisconsin's unemployment rate was at 3% or below. People are having higher take-home pay as a result of the tax cut. I think we ought to make it permanent rather than expiring in 2025. I think that the deregulation that has occurred both in Madison and Washington, D.C., allows people to put more money at risk and to be able to create more jobs. I think our biggest problem with Foxconn coming on in is having the employees that will be able to do those jobs, and that's going to require a lot more effort on STEM education at the middle and high school levels.
One issue you've talked about for years in Congress is immigration. This is an ongoing story. No solutions seem to be in sight in Congress. What do you think anything can happen to fix the immigration issue in Congress?
Well, the immigration issue is completely broken, and anybody who says otherwise isn't telling the truth. The problem that we have had in the last year and a half is that there has been no idea of having any type of compromise between the Democrats and President Trump. Trump has been quite plain in saying that the border wall or physical barrier is necessary for him to sign some type of immigration fix. Every Democrat has opposed having any kind of physical barrier along the southern border. Trump has been very plain in saying that there's no deal unless that happens, and as a result, I think the Democrats have put their opposition to a border barrier ahead of doing something compassionate, particularly for the DACA kids.
Do you think a physical barrier is what the United States needs on the southern border?
It's part of what the United States needs. It's not the complete answer to the problem, but the Border Patrol has said very publicly that with a physical barrier, they can slow down illegal crossings enough to be able to get their people there to apprehend people who are coming into the United States illegally. If that's the case, we'll be able to arrest more people and slow down the flow of illegal immigrants. And that, in my opinion, is very important, because if the word goes south of the border that you're going to pay all this money and you're not going to be able to get into the United States because of more effective enforcement, you're going to see fewer and fewer people deciding to pay the money.
The president has floated the idea of a government shutdown a couple times if the border wall isn't funded. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I'm against government shutdowns, and you got to realize that there's going to be sparring tweets and sparring press releases. The government shutdown that Senator Schumer made in January ended up blowing up in his face, where he said that the government should shut down because they wanted to grant amnesty to a large group of illegal immigrants. Most Americans are in favor of having something compassionate short of amnesty done to illegal immigrants, but they certainly don't want to see the shutdown because of Democrat opposition to a border security initiative. And you know, I can say, you know, very plainly that the result of the 2016 election shows that people are willing to compromise. Republicans have been willing to compromise relative to keeping the DACA kids in the country. Democrats have not been willing to compromise in terms of a physical border wall or high-tech stuff to slow down and maybe stop people illegally crossing the border.
Another border issue, imports and exports. The president has imposed tariffs against major U.S. trading partners, allies like Canada and Mexico and the European Union, and adversarial trading partners, I guess, like China. You've heard from your constituents, I know, at your town hall meetings about this. What would you like the president to do?
Well, I think the president made a mistake, and before he put the tariffs on, I joined 100 other Republican congressmen sending him a letter saying, don't do it. He's gone and done it anyhow. And I think what we need to do is to have country-specific tariffs, like throwing the book at China, rather than products-specific tariffs, such as agricultural products and the aluminum and steel that we need, particularly in our defense industry. I have co-sponsored Congressman Mike Gallagher's bill to say that when national security is used as an excuse to put on tariffs, Congress ought to have a vote on it before it becomes effective. Before I got to Congress, Congress gave away its authority to review or veto tariffs to the president. So there really is nothing that Congress can do except pass a bill that's sure to be vetoed, killing the tariffs. So we need to change the procedure and balance out the powers between the Congress and the president on this issue. And Mr. Gallagher's bill does that.
We're talking to Congressman James Sensenbrenner, running for re-election in Wisconsin's 5th Congressional District. Let's move on to election security. You released a statement last month saying you have no doubt that Russia tried to meddle in the 2016 election. Is the United States now, with election 2018 not far off, our primary is just a couple of weeks off, is the U.S. doing enough about foreign meddling?
The answer is no, but we've been doing an awful lot since 2016. The Department of Homeland Security has been working with state and local election officials, telling them what to look for, particularly looking for hacking of voter registration rolls and things like that. I can say that with all of the stuff that we heard following the 2016 election, the statewide recount on president ended up showing that nobody was able to hack into the voting machines that we use anywhere in the state. That's comforting, but we need to do more. The other thing we need to do is to have our social media, you know, start pointing out when there is something specific that is designed to change American moods that pop up when we go into social media sites like Twitter and Facebook. I think that's where the Russians were most successful in the last election. And Mr. Mueller has indicted 12 Russian military intelligence officers for doing that. I would doubt that Putin would order them extradited to the United States, but at least it says that there is sufficient evidence to convict these folks on what they were doing on social media. And that should be a shot across the bow that should be heard in Moscow.
Some of your Republican colleagues in the House have moved to impeach Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. What do you think of that idea?
I think it's a bad idea. I think that Rosenstein should be censured for not turning over completely the matter that has been subpoenaed by numerous congressional committees. That, I think, is the remedy that really should be used. And also, I think we should consider finding Rosenstein in contempt of Congress, which is a way to try to force him to divulge the information. I think it is more important that we get the information and find out what really went on in the Justice Department than end up getting a pound of flesh and going through a very lengthy and, I would say, expensive impeachment inquiry and trial in the Senate. I've been named the House prosecutor in 4 impeachment trials, 3 judges and President Clinton. It stops everything in Congress from being done. And I don't think we need to stop everything in Congress with all these issues that we need to address.
There's been a big anti-establishment movement in both parties in some ways. It's part of why Donald Trump is in the White House now. If I counted right, you're the 2nd longest serving member of the House right now. What would you say to someone who said, maybe it's time for a fresh face, new blood, somebody who hasn't been in the system so long?
What I would say is that with Speaker Ryan's retirement, we need to have somebody who's been both effective and has experience in terms of vigorously representing the state of Wisconsin, not only in the House, but also in terms of talking with the administration so that states with bigger delegations don't end up getting all the money and all of the goodies. The other thing I can say is that I'm the town meeting king. I had 115 of them last year, and some of them were quite contentious, but I kept on doing them, notwithstanding some of the rude and insensitive and disrespectful people that were in the audience when a lot of my Republican colleagues went into hiding. You don't see Jim Sensenbrenner go into hiding on anything.
Leave us with your top priority for, if you're reelected, for 2019.
1, making the tax cuts permanent. 2, funding the Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act, as has been promised with the authorization bill. That's a massive federal intervention in terms of trying to stop the opioid crisis. I was the principal House author of this bill, which was overwhelmingly passed and signed into law by President Obama. I think that that is probably one of the most important bills that came out of the last Congress and was signed at the end of President Obama's tenure, and I'm proud to have been the major and first House sponsor of it.
Congressman Sensenbrenner, thanks for taking this time today.
Thank you very much.
That was Congressman James Sensenbrenner, a Republican running for re-election this fall in Wisconsin's 5th Congressional District. Dr. Jennifer Vipond, a Republican in that race, will join us at this time tomorrow. Between now and the August 14th primary, candidates who are running in contested primaries have the opportunity to join us for interviews on Central Time and The Morning Show. You can find all those interviews at wisconsinvote.org. The new stormwater basin near the Garden Homes District in Milwaukee is getting a sprucing up thanks to a group of teenage artists working with the local group Artworks for Milwaukee. They went door to door in the neighborhood and asked people what they'd like to see out of the project. Then they put those ideas into a handful of murals that were installed this week. A picnic to celebrate their work is planned for August 18th. Kristen Fletterjohn is the program manager at Artworks for Milwaukee. Kristen, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having us, Rob.
Also with us in our Milwaukee studio, Blanche Brown is a multimedia artist and lead artist for the North Basin Project. Blanche, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot.
And Andrew Nash is one of the youth interns who worked on the murals. Andrew, thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you, too.
Well, Kristen, let's start with you. The Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewer District had plans for this new stormwater basin a few years ago. How did Artworks see the chance to get involved?
Well, thanks to MMSD, Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewer District, they, years ago, after a major flooding event, started to interview the residents then, and the residents overwhelmingly wanted to see art and gardens. So Jerome Flogel from MMSD reached out to Artworks to take on the project and make it happen.
And Blanche, on the art side, before the art started, the youth interns went out into the community to, I guess, get people engaged. Why was that an important first step for you?
That was a very important first step, Rob, because in my past experience dealing with public art, it's good to get input from the community, not just to assume that you know what they want, but to ask for their voice. And so when the youth went around and canvassed the neighborhood and talked to residents, that was the key to understanding what was needed and what we would like to do for artwork.
And that's, Andrew, where you come into it. What sorts of things were you asking people when you were, I guess you're just going door to door, right?
Yeah. So our questions essentially focused on what they wanted to see with our project, because we were going to be putting an art piece of some sort into the North and East Basin, but we were unsure what we were going to do. So we asked them what they were interested in seeing, icons that they tied to the community, as well as what they felt were the strengths of their community.
And what kind of things, Andrew, did people say when you showed up to talk to them?
Well, what we did was we compiled themes on what they wanted to see and what the strengths were. And our murals were based on the ideals of peace, pride, and unity, because the neighbors were really interested in promoting those strengths and bringing positivity to the neighborhood.
And Blanche, how did you take the ideas that Andrew and other young artists collected from the community and turn that into the concept that was going to lead to the final project?
So after the themes were chosen, we collectively came up together with some ideas for what murals might look like. And this is a little bit different because I actually used more collaborative work from the interns than I normally would as a lead artist doing murals on my own. That was important too because a lot of them have ties in the neighborhood as well. So to get their ideas on what some of the imagery would look like on the murals was important. And that's what we did. We came together and decided, oh, okay, this might represent peace. Oh, yeah, this is some images that might represent unity. And we came together and decided.
And Kristen, in late June, the young interns presented this project to the sewerage district. How did that go?
It went really well. And I want to take one step back and say every intern that we did hire had a connection to the neighborhood, whether they were a resident or they went to school at either MCA, Milwaukee Collegiate Academy, Rufus King, or Messmer, that are all within the neighborhood. And so, yes, we summarized all of our work into a PowerPoint presentation, brought it to the executives at MMSD and presented it to them. We answered some questions. Every person had something to say and add to the presentation, and it went really, really well.
We're talking about an art project in Milwaukee. Artworks brought our local artists and young artists together to survey the community and come up with murals in a new stormwater basin project. Some of the people who participated are in our Milwaukee studio talking to us about that now. Andrew, I want to get back to that door-to-door experience. This is not something that that I did when I was a teenager, not something that a lot of people ever do. What was it like to just be out there in the community talking to the local people?
It was quite nice. I really enjoyed the fact that the input was being taken into consideration. When I applied, I had no idea that would be a thing, and it was really nice. And the people who answered were really nice and helpful. We got a lot a variety of different people, and I quite enjoyed it.
And Blanche, I've read about public art projects around the country sometimes that just crashed and burned because people didn't do this process up front. What can go wrong if we don't have the community on board right from the start?
Well, right from the start, if you don't have the community on board and you try to slap up something, there probably more likely will be some outlacks back. And that means that people either complain to their neighborhood alder person or complain to who they think was responsible. And it'll kind of shed a cloud on what might be otherwise positive experience. We definitely didn't want that to happen to the youth. In my past, again, working with other public art projects, to get input from the community is key, and especially those who are going to be living there, seeing the murals. And so, yes, when it doesn't go well, when people try just to come in and assume they know what the community wants, it's not a good experience, believe me.
And Andrew, paint us a radio picture of the murals. Talk about what the final product ended up looking like.
Okay, so in total we did four murals, three of which are going into the North Basin and one is going into the East Basin. And the three murals going in the North Basin have very bold lettering on them, each one peace, one pride, and one unity. And then we have abstract designs for the backgrounds on each one, which are abstractions of those themes and those ideas. They're very colorful. That was something that we really, really thought was important. Very bright and vibrant. And then the last mural is a literal representation of the community, with a representation of an icon, Mother Freeman, and houses from the community, as well as Garden Homes Park.
And Kristen, are you hoping that this is maybe a blueprint for similar projects in other parts of the city?
Definitely. I think hiring the local youth, because Artworks hires teenagers to do these art projects in their own communities, is a great way to do it. And MMSD has liked our work so far. So hopefully we can work with them again in a couple of other basins that they've got going on.
And Blanche, as an artist yourself, what was it like working with these, I assume, enthusiastic young local artists?
That's a good way to put it. I really think that the exuberance and energy from the youth has been one of my favorite aspects of the project. The ideas, the passion that they showed in terms of taking ownership for the entire project from start to finish was just really key. And it was great because, you know, in the beginning when you're not an artist and hired at Artworks, the first thing that comes to your mind, and a lot of the interns said, well, I'm not an artist, I don't know what I'm doing, but I saw a confidence boost, and that was huge, and I think that was probably one of my most exciting things to see with the youth in this project.
And Andrew, can you talk about what it's like to have these murals up there? You not only helped, you know, create them, you helped bring the community on board with this. What's it like now to know that, hey, you were part of this?
Yeah, well, going off of what Blanche said, I really am glad that I was able to participate, especially since I did not believe myself to be an artist when I joined, and I'm very excited. I'm actually waiting for them to be put up. They should be put up by the end of tomorrow, and I have been waiting so I can take pictures and be like, yeah, I did this.
And would you, Andrew, would you do this again, given the opportunity?
Yeah, of course. I really like to get involved in new experiences and see all the nuances involved in different things that I never thought I would be a part of. And so getting to go even further with this would be awesome.
Well, that's all the time we have. Thanks to all of you for joining us today. I really appreciate it. We've been talking to Andrew Nash, a youth intern who worked on these murals we've been talking about, Blanche Brown, multimedia artist and lead artist for the North Basin Project, and Kristen Fletterjohn, program manager at Artworks for Milwaukee. They all joined us from our studio in Milwaukee. They're installing these murals, we heard, tomorrow at a new stormwater basin near the city's Garden Homes District. Wisconsin Public Radio has invited candidates who are running in contested primaries for statewide office and congressional seats to join us for interviews here on Central Time or on The Morning Show. You can find all of those interviews online at wisconsinvote.org. Today, we conclude our interviews with candidates for governor of Wisconsin. There are contested primaries for both Republicans and Democrats. Today, we talked to State Senator Kathleen Vinehout. She's a farmer and a current Wisconsin state senator and is running in the Democratic primary. Senator Vinehout, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Well, we're asking everyone to give us kind of their elevator pitch, the length of an elevator ride, to explain why you're running for governor.
I am running for governor to put people first. People at the center of state policy, people number one when it comes to state spending. This is a very different direction than where the state is headed now, where a few well-connected companies are doing very well and not so much for the rest of us. One of the things that I'm strongly supporting and have drafted and introduced in the Senate is free tuition for two-year in tech colleges. It's a bill where I take a portion of one of many, many different business tax credits and put it to work, opening wide the door of higher education for folks that want to get maybe not a four-year degree, but something more than high school. It's actually patterned after the Republican governor in Tennessee who looked out on his people and says, oh my gosh, folks don't have, they're not making enough money, and they don't have the skills to be able to get a good job. And I strongly believe that the perception of money being an obstacle should never stand in the way to higher education. As you know, I'm a former professor, and my dad dug ditches and was a union laborer, and he thought the college would be wasted on a girl. So I put myself through college and as a nurse's aide, and it was a struggle. And that's why I feel so strongly that free tuition is something that we need to do as a state.
Can you talk a little bit about your background as an academic, as a farmer, as a state lawmaker, how you'd make the case that prepares you to be governor?
I have a very different background than everyone else who's running for governor. I grew up in a union family. I've spent quite a few years working as a nurse's aide, working my way through college. Of course, when my dad said that college would be wasted on a girl, I had to prove him wrong. So I went on to get my master's degree in public health and my PhD in health services research. And I became a full-time college professor at the University of Illinois System in Springfield. I taught public health, health policy, health administration for 10 years. And then I followed my lifelong dream to become a full-time dairy farmer, and all of the all of the professors I used to work with were like, oh, wow, how nice, beautiful cows, beautiful hills. And all the dairy farmers that I worked with were like, oh, my gosh, you must be crazy. But I did what I wanted to. I spent 10 years milking cows. I know what it's like to get up at 4 a.m. and get hit in the face with a very dirty tail. I'm not afraid to get my hands dirty or my boots dirty. I know what it's like to work hard. And it was health insurance and going back to health policy that got me involved in the Senate. I faced a difficult decision the last time the price of milk went to hell. And our family had to make the decision of whether to get rid of the cows or to drop our very expensive, very very bad, poor coverage health insurance. And we dropped the health insurance. And my son, I took that call that no mom ever wants, that my son was sick and had to have emergency surgery. And he had three surgery and three scars later and a $15,000 hospital bill later. We took out a second mortgage to cover the bill. And I had so many people in my neighborhood or folks that I knew in the farming community that had similar stories and didn't have the equity in their farm to be able to do this. And I knew in my head that healthcare policy was something, universal healthcare was something that we could change. I knew how to do it. Back when I was teaching, we were close to having Hillary care, we thought. And then, so when I came into the Senate, when I got elected, I came into the Senate, was one of the first things I did was work with two of the other senators to create a plan called Healthy Wisconsin that covered everybody. And it covered everybody and it saved $1 billion. And we had independent actuaries that showed us that math.
Is that something, staying with health policy, would you try to do something like that now in Wisconsin if you were governor?
Well, we can't because the Affordable Care Act passed. And so the whole landscape for health policy has changed. But there are many options for states under the Affordable Care Act. And the first option we need to take is to create our own Wisconsin-based marketplace. It's a bill that I drafted in 2010 as the Affordable Care Act was passing. I then redrafted in 2011 when the rules were written, the administrative rules, and then have introduced it in the Senate Assembly every legislative session since then. It allows the state to use its powers to bring down health insurance costs, and it protects quality, it provides access, it creates stability for the plans. It does many things that the state cannot do using the federal government, including being able to offer a public option, which I support offering a public option. Just to give folks an idea, if we compare 2017 to 2018 costs, our costs went up an average of almost 40%. Minnesota's, which has their own marketplace, dropped by 10% and are expected to drop by another 11% this coming year. So there's a lot that we can do as a state under the Affordable Care Act to provide affordable health care.
Talking to Kathleen Vinehout, a Democrat running for governor of Wisconsin. It is a crowded field, as you know, 8 candidates on the ballot. How do you distinguish yourself from your competitors in this race?
I live in a very different part of the state. I live in beautiful Buffalo County, where internet comes at a slow walk. I like to say I have internet by Pony Express, and you need a local guide to tell you where the fish are biting and where you can get a cell signal. I live in a part of the state that Democrats have to win if we're going to win statewide. I've won 3 races in that part of the state where Scott Walker has won all 3 of his races, where Trump won. I live in a district that went to Trump in my home county by almost 70%. So I know how to win in a Republican area. I also don't have to take a crash course in what's happened in the Capitol in the last 8 years. I have been there. I've lived through it. I know where the bones are buried. I've written alternatives to the governor's budgets, every single one of the governor's budgets. I have showed how to spend the same dollars, the same state dollars, but with different priorities. Things like I mentioned, fixing healthcare, fixing schools, fixing the DNR, recognizing that climate change is real and is happening all around us, fixing the transportation problems with the roads. I've shown the math on how to do this. I've read the audits. I know the recommendations that the governor was given that he did not follow. I know how he spent the money and how he should have spent the money if he put people first. There's nobody else in the field that has that experience and that has done that kind of homework. I'm ready to take on the governor on the debate stage in October.
A key selling point that Governor Walker has talked about, we'll talk about, is a very low unemployment rate here in Wisconsin, lower than the rest of the country, historically low here in the state. Why change parties now?
Because people don't have money in their pockets. They're working two and three jobs, and they don't have the money to be able to live. Wisconsin is 18th worst of all states in terms of wages. Worse than Missouri, Louisiana, like I mentioned, Tennessee. Our people are hurting, and we're hurting because wages are so poor. And the things that maybe make their people's pocketbooks a little bit fuller, they're not happening. So we have people paying higher in health insurance premiums. We have people that don't have an option to get a way to refinance their student debt. All of these things make a difference when it comes to whether or not people have the ability to live. I strongly support moving the minimum wage to $15 an hour and making it a living wage, which for all of those historians out there was our history going all the way back to 1913.
We're talking to Kathleen Vinehout about her campaign for governor in the Democratic primary, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What question do you have for the candidate? Do you want to know where she stands on a particular issue? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. Kathleen Vinehout is with us. We're talking about her campaign in the Democratic primary for governor of Wisconsin, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for Senator Vinehout? Do you want to know where she stands on a particular issue that you're following? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll go to your calls. Willem is with us in Colfax. Willem, hi.
Hi. I live in western Wisconsin, where there's been a real boom in frac sand mining. My concern is that this type of activity hurts other economic activity by creating sort of a no-go zone for housing and other industries. And I wanted to ask about a specific regulation. The regulation for containment ponds for frac sand mining is a 100-year rain event, which is currently 6 inches. I think everyone that lives in this area knows that 6 inches is no longer 100-year rain event. In keeping with climate change models, it's going to occur more and more frequently. And why has our governor and our government sort of not protected us?
Willem, thanks for the call.
Willem, I'm very grateful for your question. I represent a part of the state that has more mines than any other part of the state. And those folks that live where we do remember when there was a containment pond that ruptured and spilled 10 million gallons of sludge with unknown chemicals in it into the local creek and all the way down into the Trempealeau Wildlife Area and into the Mississippi River. So this is a very serious problem, and it's a solvable problem. When I talked with local government, and just to give a little bit of background, this particular mine annexed itself into the city of Independence and the city of Whitehall to avoid the county ordinance. So the county was powerless to be able to set their regular ordinances to stop and the conditional use permit to stop what happened. What they told me is that there need to be structures in place so that a containment pond does, if it does overflow or if it does rupture, that sludge does not enter our surface water. and that the protections that the public needed were not in place. I have fought this policy for a very long time. I've introduced about a dozen bills into the state legislature to tighten up the regulation. I introduced amendments to the budget to add the inspectors needed, because at one time we learned from the Nonpartisan Fiscal Bureau that about 80% of the mines were not being inspected. And this will change under Governor Vinehout. We will hire the inspectors. We will do the inspections. No longer will mines be able to circumvent local and state ordinances, because the state will back up what the local people are trying to do. And this annexation that happened over in Independence and Whitehall should never, ever happen. And I also have a bill in the legislature to stop it, and I will work very hard to get it passed as governor.
Thanks for that call, Willem, at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Alicia is with us in Pewaukee. Alicia, hi.
Hi. Yes, I was actually just calling, and I'll get off right after this comment, but I just want to know what your stance is on immigration and the workers and what's going on in with the state, and what you're going to do. Pretty much what it is your stance and what you're going to do about it. And I'll get off now. Thank you.
Well, we need to open wide our doors and welcome in the immigrants that are living in our communities. There is no doubt in my mind that if our workers left tomorrow, we would not be able to harvest the milk that has to be milked twice a day, three times a day. I am a former dairy farmer, and I'm very empathetic to the plight of the farmers who are now waking up in western Wisconsin and realizing that their farm labor left because their workers are afraid. In my district, in Arcadia, I have heard the stories about how the ice came in the middle of the night and shone huge lights into people's living rooms and took people away in the middle of the night, and families were horrified. And the word spread on Facebook, and many, many farmers found that they were about to lose or had fearful employees, or in some cases actually did lose their employees. So this is a question of setting the tone at the top. I do not like what ICE is doing, and I will do everything as governor to stop what's happening, and I will direct my agencies to be respectful and treat everyone, immigrant or non-immigrant, with dignity and provide them the services that they are deserved under the law and the protections that they are deserved under the law.
Thanks for the call, Alicia. We're going out to Penny in Ridgeway. Penny, hi.
Hi, I'm calling from Ridgeway, southwestern Wisconsin, and Governor Vinehout, I would like to know what you will do about voting and gerrymandering for the state of Wisconsin so that we can get everyone out to vote.
Thank you, Penny. I believe that we need to repeal what I call the voter suppression law, the changes in the voting law, the changes in campaign finance law, the many, many changes that have passed the legislature that I, as a Democrat, fought against and tried to stop. I have, in the alternative budgets that I mentioned, I have put aside money to create nonpartisan redistricting. It is a bill that I support. It's a bill that's been championed by Senator Risser in the Senate, and I co-sponsored his bill. I also found out after I put the money in the alternative budget that we already have the program, the computer work to do nonpartisan redistricting, and it's being used by our local county people to do the supervisor districts and our local city people to do the aldermanic districts. It actually probably wouldn't even cost $100,000 to be able to do this, which is the money that I set aside. So I see a path as the governor to, with a Senate that is Democratic, to work with the Senate to create the bill, to pass the bill in the Senate, to work with with the press to ask the people of the state to continually put pressure on the Republican Assembly. And I believe even in a mixed House where we have Democrats and Republicans controlling the two different chambers, that we can get this passed. No longer should local elected or should the elected people choose their voters. The voters should choose the elected people.
Penny, thanks for the call. We're talking to Kathleen Feinhout about her campaign for governor. Peter is with us now in Madison. Peter, hi.
Hi there. First of all, I have to say that everything that Senator Feinhout is saying is like logic that I don't think anyone can argue. Sorry. I just feel like that's what we're talking about here. Second, what I want to know is, I mean, obviously Governor Walker is head deep in the Foxconn pool, and he seems to kind of glaze over our natural resources. And that's a very big concern of mine because I often visit Lake Michigan and other major waterways. And I want to know how you, Senator Feinhout, would maybe put some pressure on Foxconn to produce real results when they're asked. You know,
I'm going to jump in because we're a little short on time.
Well, I think the goal is to get rid of the deal, to get rid of Foxconn for a variety of reasons. Number one, the state can't afford it. But and the path that I see is what you were suggesting, Peter, which is the Great Lakes and the diversion of water off the Great Lakes. Folks forget that the Great Lakes Compact is not only something that was signed by the governors and the provincial leaders in Canada, it is also state law. Those 250 pages of that bill became state law. So I see the diversion as a violation of the law. We've already had a lawsuit from Illinois. I think there are going to be other lawsuits filed, and I think that provides us, that and the other environmental issues that you raise, provides us a pathway to get rid of this deal.
Peter, thanks. Time for one more quick call. Jonathan in Manitowoc. Jonathan, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Jonathan?
About abortion. My wife and I, we now have a 10-month-old baby. When she was pregnant, repeat for the first time, when he was 6 weeks in the belly. So I just wanted to get your stance on abortion, and if you are for abortion, at what term can we, is it
Jonathan,
not?
Jonathan, like, thanks. Just a few moments left. Your stance on abortion issues.
Jonathan, my sister almost died from a self-induced abortion, and I am very understanding that people love their children, and as I do and we all do, but it is imperative that women have access to safe services, because if they do not have access to safe services, women will die. And we are right now at a time in our history when that possibility exists. And it's very important that the next governor be very clear that we will protect women's health. And I will protect, as Governor Feinhout, women's health. We want to make sure that women do not die.
We'll leave it there. Senator Feinhout, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Kathleen Feinhout is running for governor of Wisconsin as a Democrat. That concludes our series of interviews with candidates for governor who face contested primaries. Governor Scott Walker was unable to join us. Profiles of all of the Democratic and Republican candidates for governor can be found at WPR.org. You can find interviews with candidates for governor and other offices in the state at WisconsinVote.org. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, we'll talk to the author of a new report on the ways health insurance companies are using big data and how it could affect what you pay for coverage. NCAA basketball will see some changes after last year's FBI investigation into corruption. Some critics say it's just window dressing. A reporter gives us the details. Plus, corn on Food Friday and look at some of the top news of the day. All that's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.